Welcome to another edition of the Cambridge Endurance Sports Podcast, and certainly coming in hot is today's guest, James Teagle, a professional triathlete climbing the rankings. He's had a great season, winning Ironman Staffordshire 70.3 and second at Challenge London just last weekend. And what's more, he's now Cambridge-based, and he talks to us about how training in Cambridge may be unconventional for a top pro, but it's certainly suiting him, and he's part of the Cambridge and Coleridge top boys running group, and it's certainly doing him no harm at all. If you like what you hear, please get in touch. Follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, Twitter, whatever you like. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And likewise, if you could suggest any guests or have any ideas for the podcast, do get in touch. In the meantime, here for your listening is James Teagle. The interview was done remotely, and there are a couple of times when the sound, the connection goes, but please persist, it's fine. There's nothing lost there. Enjoy. Right, I'm here on a Friday evening with James Teagle. We're online this time. How are you, James? What have you been up to today?
Hey, yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me. This week's been about recovering from 70.3 or middle distance race in London. So I'm just getting back into training today. Today was actually quite a big day. So it was a threshold swim in the morning, 5K at Parkside. And then a run session at the track with my mate Luke. And then just an hour spin down the busway, actually.
Nice. And we actually had
not the biggest day, but quite intense day, yeah.
Yeah, we had some nice weather for it at last. Yeah. Excellent. Well, you've had a brilliant season, haven't you? I mean, just some highlights of it. You might want to add to this, but you won the Ironman 70.3 in Staffordshire. That's a middle distance race, probably the top one in England at the moment. And you came seventh at the World Triathlon Long Course Championships. And then, as you just mentioned, this weekend just gone, you were second at the inaugural Challenge London behind Sam Laidlow, who people may or may not know was second at the Ironman World Championships last year. Yeah, and famed for his very strong biking. And you weren't much slower than him, were you? So you've had a brilliant season. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, it's been quite an intense season. Yeah, so I've also been racing in Spain, so I race for a Spanish team, and I've been racing pretty much every other weekend out in Spain. So things like the Spanish Triathlon Championships, Spanish Team Time Trial Championships. It's been an intense season, but yeah, a good season. And next up is World 70.3 Champs, so that's in 2 weeks.
Cool, that's the one in Finland, yeah.
Yeah.
I think perhaps you've been a bit gone a bit under the radar in the triathlon world, and I wondered if that was maybe because some of the events you've done really well in have been on the same weekend as these PTO events and other big things, so that your World Long Course race, for example, and this Challenge London one were perhaps got a bit less recognition than they might otherwise have done.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, to be honest, this year for me is about trying to get into those PTO races.
Right.
So I know they're the big races. So this year is around, I want to do well at World 70.3 Champs. I was quite close to World Long Distance, the ITU one. Mm. And World 70.3 is, I'd like to do quite well there. And that's what I've built my season around. And with in mind that from those races, I get enough points to do the PTO races, which seems to be the big thing in town. Annoyingly, I've had a few call-ups, but it's like, hey, can you be in Singapore in 2 days' time? Can you be in? And like, no.
Am I right in saying you're ranked 45 at the moment?
Yeah, so I really need to get down into the 30s somewhere. Mm. So, yeah, at the moment it's just like, you're getting those roll-down slots. Oh.
Okay, we just had an internet freeze there.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we're back with you now. That's okay. Yeah, we heard that. That's great. I suppose you've got a bit of a strategy then, have you, for like moving up the rankings? Has that been the plan? Have you sort of worked that out, or has it just been race where you want to race and see what that does?
I kind of worked that a little bit. I think you just got to pick and choose your battles, right? So I am picking and choosing my battles. I mean, Challenge London was one I did because it's really cool to race in London.
But
the World Long Distance Champs and World 70.3 Champs, and probably another one out in Asia at the end of the season for that reason. But I mean, to be honest, I'll probably do those races anyway. So I don't know if, they're pretty cool races to do.
Cool.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, you got to be a bit strategic. You can only do so many races a year. But yeah, I think, that's the goal. You know, anyone has, everyone has to think about the season. You can't just race everything. So.
Yeah. And of course, the aim there being to get recognition, but also to get some money, because they're the most lucrative, aren't they? The PTO races. But do you get by all right financially with racing for the Spanish team and the prize money and sponsorship that you've got?
So yeah, I mean, so this year is probably the first year I could say I could be a pro athlete. So yeah, I made some decent money this year racing in Spain, because you get start fees, bonuses. Obviously prize money for doing that, and then there's been a fair bit of prize money from the race itself. I'm being a bit selective about sponsors, if I'm honest, because in the past I have jumped into deals, and I just want to make sure the equipment I'm using is good. So I'm lucky that I've been building up my coaching business, so I do some online coaching alongside it, and that's something I've built up over the last 7 years with Scientific Triathlon, and so that's been a really good place, and so I do split my time quite evenly between the two, and that helps me stay balanced mentally. It's something I really enjoy, and also it just means that I'm not staying on the start line thinking, what if I don't get a good result here, because I don't know how athletes deal with that pressure, and also I don't know how athletes' spouses deal with that pressure, So I'm being quite selective. I'm trying to build a long-term career here.
Cool.
And this year I'm not jumping into sponsorship contracts unless I think that they'll be good in the long run.
Well, while we're on it then, let's talk about your equipment a bit, because I remember when I met you at the Chariots of Fire race, which of course was the biggest event of the year. when you raced for the Giulio team that we've all raced for over the years. You told me that the aero... you called it an arms race with the way that aero things are going. So I'm guessing a lot of your equipment choices is to do with getting that aero advantage. Can you maybe just talk us through a few things that have changed, and maybe give us an idea of how much faster you think you are now on the setup you've got at the moment to where you were, say, if you were pushing the equivalent power on the same on the equipment that you had when you first started?
So, I mean...
Because you're only young, just all to say that for the audience. You're only 26, 27, are you?
So it makes a massive difference. You can work it out using things so I use Best Bike Split to just calculate roughly how fast I go, but you can work it out using things like Windsor. You can use CDA live monitors, AeroPod, stuff like that. Obviously, you can get in a wind tunnel. But you'd be surprised at how fast you can go for how little watts if you get the right equipment, and how little watts some people are pushing when they go fast in triathlon. It makes a massive difference. So if you look back at my career at long distance, I had a really good first year. So this is my third year now, where I actually won some races. And I had some problems the following year, but I also signed a contract with a team and they hadn't got the best equipment, and I lost overnight 5 minutes on the bike.
Really?
So that's why I'm being really careful with my sponsorship choices now. It makes a massive difference. Just things like your aero position on the bike, your body position, the clothing you're wearing, the helmet you're using, the wheels you're using. Unfortunately, all this stuff, it's expensive, but it also makes a big difference, and that is the sad reality of it. You can buy yourself to faster speeds, and the problem is when you're racing at the top level, unless you've got stuff that's fast, you're gonna get smashed. So yeah, unless someone's offering you a lot of money, basically you don't accept a contract that's gonna slow you down. The gains are very different, very significant.
Cool. So we're talking, as you say, maybe over 5 minutes on a 90K course.
Oh, Probably more. Yeah, I mean, my equipment wasn't awful last year. It was still okay, but, like, yeah, probably more. Like, yeah, unless you just rock up, you're going to lose, yeah. So my first race I did was probably equivalent to the power I'm pushing out now. Mm-hmm. So I did Staffordshire a long time ago when I was just like, oh, I'll see what happens after this. I was doing short course at the same time. And that was probably as high as I pushed this year in Staffordshire, except I think I probably went about 20 minutes faster on the bike. my aero position wasn't optimized. Like, I was probably riding quite erratically. My bike wasn't the best. Wheels weren't the best. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it makes a massive difference.
That's quite interesting. Actually, I saw your picture, your photo of you in London, and your front, your rear disc wheel, of course, which is, I'm sure, is one of the best disc wheels as well. But I was interested in the front wheel because it reminded me of the tri-spokes we used to ride back in the day, specialised tri-spoke. And is it a three-spoke or a four-spoke?
Oh, it's a three-spoke, yeah. So that's, I've been really lucky this year that the Spanish team have given me some wheels to race in. And yeah, it's a Spanish brand called Sitz. And this seems to be a really fast wheel. I've been using it for flat races.
And is it okay in the wind?
To be honest, I've been really lucky this year. I haven't been caught any big wind. I do dread the day that I get to a windy course. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I remember getting some serious speed wobble with that, those tri-spokes. Yeah, which were, to be fair, the specialised ones were even, the spokes were fatter than what you've got. Yeah, and yeah. Do you think the triathletes, do you think they're probably not far off what the top world tour guys are doing in terms of aero advantage? Because, I looked at the world time trial today, and looking at their positions, you might even say that some of the triathletes have got better positions than what you're seeing there. Or would you think that's not right?
Yeah, it's probably completely true, and that's because UCI limit positions.
Sure.
So one of the things we don't have in triathlon is we don't have as many rules, which, does actually make it, it makes it more expensive for sport because people can innovate a lot more, which I suppose some people like, and it is great. It also makes everything a lot more expensive, and it means there is a bit more of an arms race. So we haven't got the same rules as the UCI. So obviously, in power terms, triathletes are good. You might be able to compete at like Cat 1 level, maybe elite level, but not pro tour level. Those guys are still very, very good. Position-wise, equipment-wise, triathlon might even be ahead at some places, just because we're allowed to innovate a lot more.
Yeah, and training techniques as well. I believe you've just been up to Livigno for some altitude training. Is that right? Is that something you've done regularly, or is that a new thing this year?
So my career has been like split across short course and long course. So I was with British Triathlon in Loughborough, and every year we used to go to Livigno. To do altitude training because we know there's a lot of boosts. So that, unfortunately, Cambridge, this great place it is, hasn't got many mountains and isn't at altitude. So you go up there and basically you go up there to increase your hematocrit levels. So your hematocrit will get bigger. Mm-hmm. You get more hematocrit when you go to altitude. So you go up there and you train up there for 4 weeks and you get really fit and then you come down and race. When we were there, all the pro cycling teams were there, a lot of pro triathlon teams were there. It was just a hub of sport. It's something I've done in the past and had very mixed results. This year, I don't know, I haven't seen the results in this year. I've been to the same place 3 times, and one time I got no response, and one time I got a massive response. So I'm not sure what the results are this year. I kind of don't want to know.
You weren't doing it just for the London race, but would you normally time it to come back just before the race, or do you favour the longer gap to racing when you come back, or the 10 days, 2 weeks thing?
10 days, 2 weeks is what I prefer. So the timing for London was okay. It was probably like 8 days after I came down, so not perfect. But I'm more thinking ahead for World Championships for that one. The thing with a 2 day come down is you've got to get back and to the race. You've got to do briefings, you've got to have a look at the course. So to do 2 days in triathlon, I think, is extremely hard.
Sure.
You're probably just going to be so stressed and tired from doing that negate any gain. 14 days, 10 days to 14 days, I think, is the best time. But I think, you know, we know the response drops off over a number of weeks. But yeah, I'm hoping that I can use that into Worlds to really set me up well. Because one of the things you do, you lose that attitude, is you lose a bit of top end. Because you can't push as hard. So, I mean,
you were doing live high, train high, were you? Or?
Yeah. I mean, so it's, I think in Europe it's very hard to do live high, train low, or unless you've got a lot of money. So yeah, live high, train high. And it wasn't that high. You're talking 2,000 meters, so it's not the highest. But yeah, still enough to, you can feel it.
Brilliant. But you do spend most of your time in Cambridge now, do you? Because you're not a Cambridge lad. Can you tell us about how you ended up in Cambridge and whether you like it here?
Yeah, I mean, Cambridge, I really like Cambridge. So, yeah, I mean, I was in Loughborough with the British Draft Squad there. My girlfriend Rosie was a guide on the Para Triathlon team. Pandemic happens and Rosie gets offered a doctorate at the university. So, we were umming and ahhing about coming over. We did come, and I'll be honest, I was really skeptical. I was like, oh, you know, I don't know if it's going to best me for me. Like, I'm not sure what the training setup's going to be in Cambridge. Like, it's got no hills, so.
well, I can see one out of my window actually, but
yeah,
the Chapel Hill.
You got a lot of wind, so that's good. But actually, I was really pleasantly surprised. So I rocked up to the running club just because I didn't know anyone, to be honest, and I hadn't done any research. And I rocked up, and everyone was like putting on these carbon shoes and things. I was like, oh, what are these guys doing? Like, what's going on here? You know, like, not being obnoxious, but you know, I'm pretty fit, so I thought, well, I'd be the fastest guy here. And absolutely, they absolutely put the hammer down. Guys like Jack Gray, Norman, Shreve, Jet, they're absolutely flying, and I couldn't believe it. So somehow I'd stumbled upon what was becoming the best, I think, the best running club in the country. So that year, we just formed a really good club. We joined in with the university, and we call it the BLT. So Big Lad Tuesdays, or bacon lettuce and tomato, depending on the origin story. Right. But yeah, such a good running club. Absolutely fantastic guys to run with. And those guys have really set me up. And if you look at my triathlon races now, yeah, I'm running probably one of the fastest in the field, and it's down to that club and being in that environment. And also, there's a guy here, so Luke McCarron, who's also a pro Irish triathlete, who it's been fantastic place to train. Really like it. Swimming pool's excellent on Parkside, which is the one I use. Well, it's a bit cold.
The lanes are a bit narrow, and yeah, but if you can get your lane, if you can take over your lane, which I presume you do, you probably intimidate everyone out.
What you do is you put a whiteboard at the end of a pool, so it looks like you're really official, and everyone gets out your lane. Yeah, it's good. The training setup's good. The running's excellent, and the riding's really nice as well. If you go south, especially, it's really beautiful, and you don't get bored of it. And there is some hills, so
yeah.
It's a fantastic place to train.
Oh, that's really good to hear. Yeah, I mean, Alistair Brownlee couldn't hack it here, but you're proving him wrong.
Well, to be fair, he was studying a medicine degree at the same time. So, but yeah, I think if he'd actually explored, he might have found that Cambridge is a pretty cool place to train.
Let's talk a bit more about that. So, you've actually joined CNC, haven't you? And have you done one or two of the relays with them?
Yeah. So, I mean, last year was a bit of a tough year for me triathlon wise, so I was running a lot of the guys, and so we did like the 6-stage road relays where we were very close to winning it, very close, but we got third in the end. And you know, just to have like the team, I think that was like the first medal I've had in like 30 years or such. Then we went to national cross country where we got silver, so I think we're just building and building, and we've got more people joining. You know, it's the nice thing is actually that a lot of people in the club have come through the club. So we have had a few additions, but it's the coaches there have done a really good job of just bringing people through. And, you know, you look at the juniors in that club and you're like, flipping hell, these juniors are flying. Like, they're off on scholarships to America and things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just a really nice club to have, ideal timing. And everyone's, there's no big egos in the group either, which is really nice. So you've had everyone does the training. No one gets shoppy and walks out if someone beat him or whatever, which can happen in some running groups or whatever. It's fantastic. Really enjoy it. And like I say, we're linked up with the university group as well, which just adds to the depth. And that's been a really, really positive setup in Cambridge. And I think probably, like I say, one of the best running clubs in the country right now.
So you do the Tuesday night regularly, do you, with them? Is there another session that you do regularly in the week with them?
Typically we do the Tuesday night, which is like everyone's there, no matter who you are, like juniors all the way up to seniors, people running for GB, coming in out of, just the first runs, whatever, for that group. It is a good group, there are other groups, but this group, it's quite a high-level group. And then we on Fridays, typically we just organise something amongst ourselves. So the juniors have a programme and things, but we just typically organise something. Let's do a tempo run. We just go and do it. So done a lot of training with Norman Shreve, especially, and Jack and Jep, who are just, basically we've been doing like tempo stuff and things, which set me up really well for triathlon. Fantastic.
Cool, yeah. Well, we've had Jep and Norman on this show. I haven't had Jack yet. I don't know if he's forgiven me for disqualifying him from the half marathon yet, but that's another story. Yeah. It wasn't my fault.
He'll forgive you eventually.
Yeah, probably. Well, he's certainly doing very well at the moment, isn't he? Let's talk about 5Ks and things like that. Is that something that you... is a priority for you, like getting a fast 5K or 10K time, or is that just a byproduct of your training?
No, the funny thing is, if you go and look at my Power 10, you won't find any fast times in there. Because the problem with triathlon is, I don't think I've done a 5K since, the reason you won't find any times in there, because I haven't done a race until since like 2017. And the problem with triathlon is now it's a year round sport. So this year I was signed up for a couple of 5Ks. But then the Spanish team were like, hey, we need you to come and race in Spain. You need to do this race and this race, like last minute. To basically November, there's nowhere really to race those 5Ks. So last year I was really lucky that I could do the cross country and the road relays. Both of them obviously not standard distances, so... didn't get any time for them. They take a lot out of you as well, right? So if you do a 5K properly, like, you've got to be consistent in your training, like, to be good. So ultimately, unfortunately, it's not my first sport and it's not where I'm making a living. So if I don't do a 5K, then that's 3 days out of training that I've got to sacrifice, basically. Because I'm racing quite a lot, it's quite a time limited. I got, a limit on time. And then, do something like a half marathon would absolutely wreck my block. Right. I'd like to get some more in if I can figure out a way to fit it in and to convince myself that it's justified, I'll do it. I really fancy doing the Cambridge half marathon.
There's a place for you if you want it.
Yeah, as long as I run in the right vest and the right number. Because it's run by the same people who do Outlaw Triathlon. That'd be really cool to race in, not too far away from my house. But just how do you fit that into your season? Like a half marathon in the middle of, April?
No, beginning of March, 4th of March next year, I think.
Yeah, which is just before quite a few big races happen to be. So, yeah. If I can swing it somehow, I'll do it for sure.
Cool, nice one. So let's talk a bit about your training now then. So you're doing this Tuesday night session. I mean, obviously I wouldn't be as fast anyway, but if I was doing that kind of session on a Tuesday, I would probably, at my age, find it hard to do a hard bike session the next day. How do you sort of fit in your quality sessions in your week in the three sports?
There's some older, Ian's like in his 40s and he's running down there. So and he's running flipping fast. I'll be honest, Tuesday nights are quite tough. So you gotta think about your training and how you periodize it. So I've definitely made some sacrifices because that Tuesday night session is tough, but because of it, I'm running quite well. I try not to get too complicated with my training. So I don't, you know, you can go down a rabbit hole. Everyone's got these theories and you do this and you do that. I think you just got to keep it simple and look at what you need out of your training. And you've only got so much energy in the bank, right, across a week or across a training block. You can't do everything. So I'm lucky that I'm doing the sport a fair amount of time now, that I know my body pretty well. I know what works for me. If you looked at my training, you'd probably say it was quite polarized a lot of the time, which, you know, is surprising being a middle distance athlete where we spend a lot of time in zone three, which would be in a five zone model, that bit. So I'd say quite polarized, but with the occasional zone three session, just because I want to get some race specificity in there. The thing with that is it allows me to do the training and to get the consistency in week in, week out, which is, I think, the most important thing. So polarized training, I'm just going to say it's 20% hard, you know, 80% aerobic slash easy. It's obviously not exactly the same as that, but...
Are you talking sessions or overall time there?
Overall time there. So, yeah, so there's a lot of aerobic work. I do try to be a bit more nuanced in my aerobic work, so put a bit of cadence work in there, a bit of high torque work in there, some specifics around aero position. So it's not just, you're not just rolling along. Running wise, I mean, to be honest, I don't run faster than like a 5 minute K when I'm not running hard.
Really?
I mean, I know that some of the runners do different, but a lot of people don't. And if you look at a lot of elite triathletes, they're not running faster than that. Aerobic runs. So that's interesting.
So that means you're taking your easy runs very easy.
Yeah, I think it ultimately, I think you're just making it too complicated. I think you just time on feet is just important, right? So, like the impact force through the ground, like I don't get injured on running. So, well, touch wood.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons is I can handle that volume because I just spend time on feet. And so the hard sessions are fairly hard and the easy sessions are very easy, especially the run side of things. Swimming's a bit more nuanced. So I put some, because of the demands of the event, it's very important you start quite hard and then recover. So you have to be very good at dealing with any lactate buildup straight away. So I think it is important to put some sessions in where you're trying to deal with that. So some kind of speed effort followed by threshold, some kind of lactate, like some kind of lactate shuttling sessions in the pool.
That's mainly to replicate starts and surges.
Yeah. Which is important because you can draft in the swim, you can sit on feet and swim. Which has a big impact. And because of the way that the season is, so you probably have like a decent block of training in the winter, and then you put mini blocks in the year and you incorporate racing into your blocks of training. So, like I say, this year I've been thinking about World 7.3 as my priority. So everything's building around that. So probably haven't gone fresh into all my races. But hopefully it all pays off in that race.
So do you have a weekly schedule, or is it more based around a different time scale?
And to be honest, I do a 7 day plan because it fits with life. Like there's more to, you know, pool time, like when your mates are training, that kind of thing. So yeah, usually Monday would be a double run with maybe an aerobic ride if I feel okay on that day. Tuesday, and that's an aerobic day, nice and easy, nothing too hard. Tuesday would be a VO2 swim session, so it's 400 meter pace swim session, so you do repeats around that.
Right, that's quite hard.
To replicate the start of a race, followed by a speed session and on the run, so something like about 8K's worth of work at probably 10K pace, maybe a bit shorter sometimes. Then on the Wednesday would be an aerobic swim, bike and run. So aerobic swim of 4 to 5K, ride maybe like 4 hours, and then run just a easy 30 minutes to 60 minutes, depending on the time of year. Thursday would be a bike session, an aerobic swim and another run. Friday would be a run session and a CSS swim, so threshold based swim in the morning.
That's critical swim speed, yeah. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. So 15, I'd call that 1500 meter pace. Saturday morning would be aerobic swim, probably with a tri club, if I can. And then, an aerobic ride of 3 or 4 hours, and then aerobic run, maybe up to an hour. And then Sunday would be a fresh old bike session, probably, or some kind of bike session with my mate Luke, out probably South Cambridge way, and an aerobic run. So, fair bit. Of his alone, but like sessions tend to be with other people, that kind of thing, just because it makes it more doable and more enjoyable as well. It's great when you got someone, like the great thing especially about the run club is you got 10 guys who are running at your pace, maybe like 250Ks, and there's 10 of you, and it's like, well, this is insane. So you don't even have to work, it's like you just get pulled along. Fantastic. And on the bike, just having someone there with you just, adds a bit of motivation. As much as I can is with other people. Sure. You end up, actually doing quite a lot alone, but as much as I can with others.
Yeah, cool. Well, I think some of the listeners, a lot of the listeners are runners. They'll probably be a bit taken aback at how many sessions you're doing in a week, the fact that you don't have a full rest day in the week. So you really are managing to recover within a high volume and I would say relatively high intensity training program.
Like I say, the intensity is
even if it is only 20%, it's still a lot.
It's still a lot because of the amount of hours you end up doing. I think the thing with training is it's got to be consistent, and it's got to be, so the nice thing is it's consistent and that's what you aim for. So I think if you are knackered at the end of a week, you've gone too hard and your training's too hard. So what you need to be able to do is you need to be able to repeat it week in, week out. And then, occasionally you would have a couple of easy days and you'd probably just go, to be honest, you'd look at your HRV maybe, but you'd also go, okay, how bad have I felt for the last, was yesterday a bad day? If you've had 3 bad days in a row, I'd say it's time for a bit of rest or feeling. But I don't schedule in rest, that kind of thing. I just think, hey, how am I feeling? I'm feeling a bit tired. Then I'll take a couple of easy days. Because your body's not a machine.
Sure, I think people need to bear in mind as well that even though you're only a youngster, you have been doing it a fair while and you've probably built to that. I'm guessing when you were 16, you probably did have an easy day.
You would, when I was 16, one of the mistakes we made in Loughborough was I think we did just jump straight into that. And if I went back again, I would take a bit more easy stuff because I think that was way too hard looking back on it. But straight away, I think it was too much. So that's something I'd change.
Cool. Yeah, so if any of my athletes are listening and they're saying, why aren't you giving us as much as that? Just be aware of your limitations, everybody. James is a professional triathlete and he's worked up to this. Right, so I'm just thinking about where you're at now then. You've had these brilliant results and, you're about 0.4 of a mile per hour slower than Sam Laidlow at the weekend, something like that. So you're very close to this top end. I mean, we're talking 1 or 2% maybe off where you need to be to really be at the very top. Is that something, because your trajectory is upwards, are you just thinking, keep doing what I'm doing and I'm getting better and that's going to get me there? Or have you got a plan to change anything to try and get that last percentage out of things?
So, I'm constantly experimenting with equipment and things. So, yeah. I think actually a lot of that time can still be made up with like a better position in terms of the helmet position, that kind of thing.
Sorry to interrupt. So, basically, are you thinking your swim's probably all right and your run's probably all right? It's just about getting the bike a bit better, or do you think there are gains in the others as well?
So, there's gains. I think there's gains in all three. The swim is one which I haven't really put too much focus on the last couple of years, just because I've been doing a bit of swimming, obviously, but like it hasn't been like I've been turning up tired, that kind of thing, to those sessions, and I've been okay with that, because I think there's actually, ironically, a lot of technical stuff to be made up on the swim still. So I have been working, I did a little bit of work with Tim, who was out at a tri club, and been working on my technique, that kind of thing, and I have got faster just because of that. I've become a bit lazy in that. So my swim went backwards after I started doing a short course, because pandemic, and didn't spend a year in the pool, which didn't help, which took a long time to come back, and I don't think it's ever come back properly, but I can. So the swim has a little bit of work to do. The bike, I think the bike is pretty much, like, it's okay. Like, it's there. Like, maybe, like, 10, 20 watts off, like, the very top. But I don't think that's impossible. I think, if I'm honest, yeah, a bit more consistency on that, because the amount of racing we're doing might help. Looking again at the position, that kind of thing, is going to be helpful there. But I think that's coming. That's not something I'm massively chasing. I think that's there.
And maybe even just doing racing against the best.
Yeah, I think that's it. It'll just like one of the things you were really surprised in last year at World Championships, because I went to Worlds last year and got 14th, but at the 70.3 Worlds in Utah, but was actually how different it was to racing in normal 70.3. Because it's so surgy. So you have to be able to deal with massive surges because of the racing dynamic. So that's something that I've been working on this year, and hopefully it plays out in 2 weeks' time with that. So, yeah, I think it's learning how to race is also really important. And also learning how to push your body. Like, one of the things that I've been really scared of is blowing up these races, because I have blown up a couple of times. But that comes down to nutrition rather than bike, you know, losing bottles, that kind of thing, silly things. But ultimately learning how to racecraft. So I think, yeah, there's a bit of work to do on the bike, but also experience is paying a lot of dividends there. And then, the run, like I say, I think I'm really lucky this year that my run's in a really good place. It'll be interesting to see. Well, ITU, I did blow up in the last 5 kilometres, but I had run too fast, but I'd run 6 minutes into everyone over that distance, so... I think the run, thanks to the guy basically I've been running with, and just turn them for a watch and just run hard and easy when I'm not, is, yeah, that's in a good place.
But that World Long Course, that was a longer distance, wasn't it?
It was. So basically I got to, like, I knew it was long, so I got to like 25K, which is obviously about 4K over normal distance, and the lights kind of went out. I was up to third at that point. First and second were within like 30 seconds, and it's what happens when you bonk, right, and something didn't go right, but the lights just went out, so I ended up seventh. But
there again, you were up with the guy who I think came fourth at the PTO just last week, weren't you? He won it, didn't he? And you were pretty close to him up to that point.
The level is high, the level is competitive, there's a lot of good guys, and you can't say who's going to win. The nice thing about the racing at the moment is you can't say who's going to win each race. You don't know. But I think my run is in a good place, basically. A bit of work to do on swim, a bit of work on the bike. But hopefully the run is there.
Cool. And you're not attracted by the even long, you're not attracted by the Ironman distance at all?
I don't know. So
hesitant.
Yes, but hesitant. I still I like racing, if that makes sense, rather than surviving. So I'm not convinced that Ironman racing is racing. I think it's more like who can survive. And at the moment, I mean, I'm definitely going to do one at some point, but at the moment, I quite like the short stuff. I'll probably do one next year, actually, just to see how it goes. I really like that racing, and I really like the fact that it's really close and... That kind of dynamic of racing as well.
Yeah. So when you're racing for your Spanish team, is that usually sprint and Olympic?
Oh, it's everything. So super sprint all the way up to 70.3.
Right.
They did ask me to do the long distance one, the Ironman, but I didn't. I felt foot down that one.
And of course you've done duathlons as well, haven't you?
Yeah. So duathlons. Yeah. They have in Spain. They have a really, really good league. You'll have 100 guys on the start list, 100 pro guys, 100 elite guys on the start list, and it'll be a really competitive race. They tend to shut down like whole towns. Especially you've got so much space out there that they shut down the town, they close all the roads, everyone in town turns up, has a big party, and the race is always fantastic. But so it is a very different dynamic out in Spain. Obviously, it'd be nice to have that in the UK, but focus hasn't been the focus. So Racing in Spain is awesome. But yeah, we race across all distances. So even team time trials, which are really good fun. So you do like...
if you start up like that, yeah.
you start with like eight guys and then you have to finish with four of you or three of you, depending on the race. And basically you have a couple of domestiques in the swim, a couple of domestiques in the bike, and then never be the slowest runner because everyone just pushes you along. So yeah, they're really good fun. Really, really good fun.
Oh, nice. And before we sort of go on to talking about maybe some tips for age group races, maybe to finish, but before that, I've got to mention the video that some people may have seen that went viral a while ago, where you're finishing a race and you take a slight wrong turn and the guy comes past you and then lets you retake the lead to win. You were telling me it's quite an interesting story there. Can you tell that again for the listeners, please?
Yeah, so as I was saying, if you remember, like, Eat Out to Help Out, so this was in the pandemic. That year the year before I'd won some, or got on the podium of some European Cups, which is like a decent level racing and European Sprint Champs. So I was off to do some World Cups, so I was in really, really good shape. And then obviously the pandemic happened, and that's probably my best shape of my life, just sat at home. Obviously I kept training, and then the government in the summer were like, had their Eat Out to Help Out, and suddenly everything was okay. Obviously it was not, but me and my girlfriend bought a camper van and went off to Spain to do a race. Basically we got there and they closed the borders again, so we're stuck in Spain. My team were like, hey, come and do this local triathlon, which is like the equivalent of like, your local Ely triathlon or whatever. and every man and his dog was there. Javier Gomez rocks up, all the top Spanish guys rock up because it's a triathlon. So it was really cool. But anyway, it wasn't the best organized race in the world. I'm not using that as an excuse, because everyone was told what was happening, but in Spanish, and I don't speak any Spanish. So that was a big briefing on the beach. We jump in the water. Gomez swims off, 5-time world champion. And everyone's following me, and I go completely the wrong way. everyone follows me the whole time. I went about 6 times in this race. We're sprinting out for, I think it was second maybe, might have been third. In the run, with one of my teammates, and I missed the turning. I didn't notice there was a turning for the last lap. And he went the right way, but I'd out-sprinted him by about, I was about 100 metres ahead of him at this point. To be honest, I didn't even realise it was the finish, but I did realise I should be running that way, because everyone was shouting at me. We went around the corner, and he stopped, and I just assumed, hey, he's got a penalty or something, because they had these, like, obviously COVID security measures, so you didn't want people massing at start line, so it wasn't a clear finish line, so I just ran on past, and then realised, oh, I've crossed the finish line, and I went back to thank him. But it's quite a nice story, because, yeah, I say, he managed to raise quite a lot of money for his brother, because it was really weird, because it went viral all over the world. So I sat in this house in Spain and suddenly saw my face on the TV, and I went channel number one, because it was the only sport that was happening. Then next week I was having interviews from Australia, the US, BBC. It was really, really, really weird. So the guy actually managed to raise some money for his brother, who was unfortunately disabled, got some disabilities that he needed some help with. He went to speak with the UN, and but he's actually my teammate, so it was pretty funny. It's just a really nice story. I don't really mind being in the middle of it. It was just really,
Despite maybe one or two comments, you definitely weren't the baddie there. It's not as if you deliberately stole the race back just because of a desire to come second or whatever it was. No, it was just a nice sporting moment, wasn't it?
It was, and it was just one of those things that you laugh about when you're I'm 80 whatever. It was a really, really, really bizarre moment for sure, but really nice.
Cool. So let's use your knowledge now and your experience of top level racing in 2023, because mine's getting more and more out of date as the years go by. So if we've got, and I've got some athletes who are doing their first 70.3s and their first Ironmans racing, apart from equipment and so on, what do you think are the vital things maybe in the last 3 or 4 weeks going into a race that people should be taking care of as absolute essentials?
I am going to mention equipment here. have your equipment ready. So don't be in that last week and be like, oh, I haven't got my equipment ready. Your equipment should be ready 3 weeks out from the race. You shouldn't need anything at that point. If you are, you know, in your last week and you're panicking, it's just going to add stress. So that's one of the most important things. It's also, don't panic about your training. You know, a lot of your training has been done by that point. So, you know, you just got to trust the training you've done. If a training block hasn't gone so well, maybe you've been ill or whatever, you still can't make it up at that point. So, like, you're in the boat with what you've got, and you've got to make the best of what you've got. Especially in those last couple of weeks, you know, don't push too hard. If a taper is right, you'll probably start to feel quite fresh. Doesn't mean that you have loads of energy you need to go and smash every session. And also be aware that a lot of people have like taper tantrums and like they get nervous, that kind of thing. So have a way to identify when that's happening. You're nervous, you know, you're kind of even psyching yourself out in your event. Maybe you've got like, some obviously injuries happen, but you get like phantom injuries, that kind of thing. It's just having a process and a way of dealing with that. Everyone gets nervous before a race, and every race I think you get nervous before. But it's just having a method to deal with that as well, and just being able to get into the race and not have psyched yourself out beforehand.
Yeah. And given that most people, not everybody, but most people are not going to be probably pushing themselves hard over the full distance of their race, especially if it's Ironman, in training, have you got any particular sessions or tips for how people can practice their nutrition strategy?
I would put some race-specific sessions in there. So I would do things like brick sessions, that kind of thing. And
have you got an example brick session for a 70.3, for example, that you think would be a good one to do without, if you've not got a lead-up race, if you've not got a B race of the same distance, what would be a good session to practice your nutrition strategy?
So I would go for something like 75% of the distance on both the bike and the run. Now, you wouldn't do this all the time because it's a big session, but you do it as an effort to see, okay, how does that feel and how's it go? So maybe 75% of the time. So it's going to take you to do your 70.3. I'd look at time and not distance because depending on the course, it could do, you know, it could be very different actually how long you take. And I'd use your nutrition, use your race day nutrition. Don't be using stuff that's, you know, I know race day nutrition and stuff can be quite expensive, but use it because you put a lot of time into it. Just make sure that your stomach can take it. And get off a bike and, you know, how does it feel? How does the pacing feel? How did I feel having done that? So you've got those sensations ready. You have got to train your gut as well. So one of the things that is nice about, well, not nice, but one of the things you can do is obviously you can take in carbohydrates when you're racing. And that's something you can train. So you've got to train your gut to take that. The more you can actually absorb and take in, the better. But if you've not trained your gut to do that, then you're going to be severely limiting yourself on race day. So I'd have quite a few sessions where you're practicing with your nutrition, even if they're not exactly the same. So maybe it'd be, you know, you've got a tempo bite session, or maybe it's a threshold bite session, you know, using your nutrition. Okay, can I take in 90 grams of carbohydrates now? How does that feel? If it doesn't feel great, then don't do it on race day, because you're gonna have to toilet and have a great race. So I would be using your nutrition around quite a few bigger sessions that you're gonna use on race day. Use your equipment, don't wait until the last minute to use your equipment. Maybe throw in a couple of brick sessions to see, okay, how does this feel when I'm, you know, actually using everything and pretty much near race intensity.
Yeah, for the non-triathletes, brick sessions are when we combine at least two disciplines. So we're doing a bike to run or a swim bike or all three. Yeah, no, that's great advice. That's great. Yeah, carry on.
I was going to say, I've been in quite a few in Cambridge with the lads, actually. So, so you can even get your mates to help you. And I would maybe go and do like the bike portion with one friend or something, then jump off and then have someone waiting for you, which is what the lads have been really great with. They've been helping me out with that. So, you know, jump off a bike and run and have someone to help run you around at your pace. Because on race day, you'll have adrenaline. But yeah, I've been using the lads to help me with that. And it's been really helpful, so maybe you could apply the same.
Nice one. Yeah, so I always ask guests for their favourite training session and also their favourite meal or pre-race meal. It can be pre-race meal, can just be meal in general. So can you hit us with that?
Favourite training session? I mean, despite my training being often quite polarised, I do like a big tempo session on the run, because I just find it like, it's where my, like, obviously I do 7.3 triathlon because I enjoy it, but also I'm kind of good at it, and that's kind of the same zone. So I really enjoy it because basically I'm often the strongest and I'm suffering less than everyone else. that's one of the reasons I enjoy it.
Any favourite places to run in Cambridge area?
So we do a lot of running around Eddington, actually. So we do a lot of sessions around Eddington. We run around the Science Park because there's a good loop there. We run around West Camp's site, so where all the university buildings are in West Cambridge. I quite like running down the river for my easy runs, so run out towards Fenditton and so on. So running in Cambridge is really nice, and obviously there's not many hills, so it's not too hard either. So it's really beautiful and really nice, and you've got really good infrastructure, so, and you feel quite safe at all times. So we do obviously a lot of sessions on the track as well.
Well, we do our Wednesday sessions in that area, Eddington or West Side. So if you happen across us, come and show us how it's done on a Wednesday evening. If you ever, but you don't usually run on a Wednesday evening, do you?
I've already been quite sore on Wednesday evening.
Cool.
Yeah, so yeah, the Cambridge is awesome.
And what about the food then?
Yeah, so you asked for, what was it, pre-race meal? So,
yeah, meal or pre-race meal, up to you.
So yeah, pre-race meal would be pizza, because the nice thing about pizza is you can get pizza wherever you are in the world.
True.
So like if you're racing in China, or you're like, say I raced in Russia, you couldn't believe it now, but I did, you know, and like they all have like, all these weird grains and stuff, but the one thing you can get, and you've had it before, you can test it. So yeah, something like that. I prefer rice if you can get rice, but often, you know, with microwaves and stuff in hotels, are a bit, you can't always get it. And you know, paella, they like to, you have to have two people. So pizza is usually the best one, I think.
Cool, that's brilliant. Well, last question, just up for the triathlete nerds out here. Can you give us a prediction for who's going to win the 70, apart from you, the 70.3 Worlds, male and female?
Oh, that's a tough one. So obviously I'm going to say that, yeah, excluding me, because I've got to have confidence in myself.
Sure.
So, you know, if I get disqualified on the finish line, the next couple of people across the line would be, I think it's really tough. A lot of people are going to Nice as well. But you're looking at people like someone like Aaron Royal, I think, is a dark horse.
Even though he didn't have a great race this week, did he?
No, but I think that's maybe because he's, yeah, getting ready for this one. Someone like, I'm going to go for some pretty off-piste names here. Yuri Killen, a Netherlands guy from the Netherlands.
Is he the one that won the race that Skipper was in there? Yeah. I think he won the Challenge Gerenberg, whatever it's called.
Yeah, he's a good athlete.
Yeah.
I think a lot of athletes get underlooked. I think you've got to look at, you know, Christian Blumenfeld is obviously Christian Blumenfeld, but he's doing a lot of travelling before the race, a lot of racing. So that'll be interesting to see. Someone like Jason West, who obviously came second in that PTO race.
We're talking of Jason West. What do you think he could run in a straight half marathon? Any idea?
I've got no idea. Like some of it, I don't believe anything that anyone puts on Strava. I mean, he's got to be running like a 63, hasn't he? Probably 62, maybe, but 63. I tend not to look at Strava, and I tend not to look at splits from races too much because they're all nonsense. So.
But he does seem to be that level above, doesn't he, on the running at the moment?
Yeah, he does. So maybe like a 63, 62. But then I know people who just run exactly the same speed off a bike as they do in training. So, so it's hard to know.
Cool.
Yeah, probably around that.
Cool. And for a women's winner?
I'm going to go for some Brits. So I'm going to say someone like India Lee.
Okay.
There is. Maybe someone like Kat Matthews. I'm going to go for an all-British podium. Lucy Buckingham, why not?
Lucy Buckingham, not Lucy Byron, Buckingham.
Oh, she could also win it. So right. We've got a very strong women's team on the British side. Right. Yeah, I don't see why we can't. I mean, that'll be miraculous. But yeah, we've got some very strong British girls, so why not?
Well, okay, well done. Very patriotic of you, sir. Brilliant. So where are you from originally?
I'm from Leicester, so not million miles away.
Cool.
So you 90 minutes by car.
Brilliant. Okay, so just to finish then, tell us where people can follow you, if you want people following you, on what you prefer, and if you want to plug your coaching or any sponsors, whatever, go for it.
So you can follow me on Instagram, James Teagle, Instagram, which is probably the one I use the most. I do update that a fair bit. Not really massive on Twitter at the moment or Facebook, but Instagram, you probably see I put some updates up there. I do coach for Scientific Triathlon, at the moment I'm not taking any athletes on with that, but there are some other fantastic coaches. Obviously, if you listen to this podcast, then Ben's also a fantastic coach. That's pretty much it, really. Most of my sponsors are Spanish team, so cool. Spanish sponsors, and who do fantastic wetsuits and speed suits. So
what shoes do you wear?
What shoes? Running. I wear the Nikes, so the Nike Vaporfly Freeze.
Okay.
And the only reason being that they were the first to bring out, and I'm pretty sure the other shoes are just as good now. In fact, the Hockers and stuff look really good. But until someone shows a significant advantage, I still use the Nikes because psychological thing.
Cool. And I'll plug as well your Scientific Triathlon podcast, which you've been on once or twice, haven't you? But it's mainly Mikael, is it Ericsson?
Yeah, Mikael. So he does a really good job with it's that triathlon show. So
that's it.
Maybe more like he tends to get some the experts in different fields on there. So if you are interested in learning about a bit more in depth about the mechanisms behind sport, then I think that's a really good one.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I hope to see you out running sometime. And when you've won the Worlds, will you come back and give us a brief interview about that?
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see how that goes. But let's say so. Thank you.
Thanks, James. That's brilliant. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat with James Teagle. I certainly did, and lots of great advice there as well for those of you who are just starting your triathlon journey or starting to approach those high echelons of the professional ranks. Please tune in again for another episode. Also go back to some of our previous episodes. You might be interested in the one with Will Clark and Mark Matthews, Tom Vickery. We've got a few triathletes in the back catalogue there. So go back and have a listen to those. In the meantime, keep enduring.